The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take and Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
This is the Bloomberg Daybreak Europe podcast, available every morning on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. It's Thursday, the 28th of March, here in London. I'm Caroline Hepke.
And I'm Lizzie Burden. Coming up today, the Fed's Waller repeats the phrase no rush four times as he urges caution on rate cuts.
JP Morgan warns an out-of-the-blue shock could bring an end to the current market rally.
Plus, watch out for the big nasties. MPs identified the major spending challenges facing the next UK government.
Let's start with a roundup of our top stories.
The Federal Reserve Governor Christopher Waller says policymakers should hold fire on cutting rates in the face of new economic data. Waller cited recent inflation figures, which he said were disappointing, pointing to a strong economy and robust hiring as evidence that the Fed has room to wait.
In my view, it is appropriate to reduce the overall number of rate cuts or push them further into the future in response to the recent data. I see no rush in taking the step of beginning to ease monetary policy.
Christopher Waller speaking there. Treasury slipped in Asian trading in response to the comments, and that sentiment chimes with that of Jonathan Haskell, an external member of the Bank of England's Monetary Policy Committee, who told the Financial Times that Bank of England rate cuts should be a long way off.
Now, the S&P 500 index is on track for a roughly 10% return this quarter, but a JP Morgan strategist says that the market might not see an end to the historic five-month US equity rally coming. Bloomberg's Tiwa Adebayo has the details.
Questions about when the fortunes of US equities will change have been swirling the market for months. According to one observer, though, that shift will come when investors least expect it. JP Morgan's chief global equity strategist is warning clients to diversify their portfolios if they want to avoid being stuck on the wrong side of the momentum trade. A flash crash, as he calls it, is not impossible thanks to risks hovering in the background. Looking at recent history, the rush into popular momentum stocks like the Magnificent Seven is typically followed by a correction. It's happened three times since the global financial crisis. In London, Tiwa Adebayo, Bloomberg Radio.
Ozempic, a drug for which Novo Nordisk charges almost $1,000 in the US, could be profitably produced for less than $5 a month. That's according to a study by Yale University, King's College Hospital and Doctors Without Borders, who say the blockbuster drug could be manufactured for 89 cents to $4.73 for a month's supply, and that includes a profit margin. The drug industry often depends on such high prices by saying that they defend such high prices by saying they make possible the research and development that leads to breakthroughs. Novo declined to provide production costs for Ozempic, but told Bloomberg that 75% of its gross earnings goes back to rebates and discounts to ensure that patients have access to products.
Now, Janet Yellen says that she expects insurers to help cover the cost of rebuilding the Baltimore Bridge. The US Treasury Secretary's comments come after Joe Biden called on Congress to approve funds for the Port of Baltimore's reconstruction. The Transport Secretary, Pete Buttigieg, told Bloomberg this isn't a political issue.
This isn't going to happen overnight. The original bridge took about 5 years to put up, and this isn't going to be cheap either, but we do have emergency relief funds to help in these kinds of situations. We really cannot yet say what the total price tag will be.
Although Buttigieg couldn't give an exact number, the cost is expected to run into the billions of dollars. A lengthy shutdown will also cause chaos for commuters and for trade. The port is one of the top ports in the US in terms of volume and value of cargoes.
A watchdog has laid out the scale of spending challenges facing Britain. The Public Accounts Committee identified nearly 20 areas in need of billions of pounds of government funding. Chris Pitt has more.
Hospital buildings, defence equipment, affordable housing, school maintenance. Just some of what the Public Accounts Committee report calls big nasties. 19 problems they say essential spending can no longer be put off for after years of neglect. The committee of MPs from different parties thinks each one of these will cost the government billions. This as Britain is in the grip of a fiscal squeeze, with the debt-to-GDP ratio now close to 100%. In London, Chris Pitt, Bloomberg Radio.
Now, the French Prime Minister Gabriel Attal has pledged more unemployment welfare cuts as he aims to press on with President Macron's economic reform agenda. The changes which Attal expects to implement in the autumn include minimising the maximum duration of welfare and cutting payments over time. Macron's leadership was centred on economic policies designed to overcome decades of weak economic growth. But with a European slowdown, unemployment is rising and the budget deficit in France has widened beyond the government's targets. The objective is to reach full employment, Attal said on Wednesday, but modifications pose a risk of a backlash ahead of the European elections in June.
Those are your top stories. On the markets, the MSCI Asia Pacific Index is lower 0.2%. Euro Stoxx 50 futures are higher 0.3%. And the 10-year Treasury yield is higher 2 basis points at 4.21%.
Now, in just a moment, we're going to dive into the markets, of course. A lot of major global markets are going to be closed tomorrow, but then we get the Fed's preferred inflation gauge. We've also had the comments from Christopher Wallace, so we'll unpack those, but read it and weep, Lizzie, on the Bloomberg Terminal this morning. A classic medium-sized Chanel handbag, you know, the one with the flap and the nice little gold bit on the front, €10,000. That's for the first time. The prices have gone up in Paris. They reviewed actually the prices for these handbags around the world a little bit earlier this year. But yeah, €10,000. It's more than $10,800.
Well, look, Caroline, as a recent entrant to the world of luxury handbags, I've been studying this in great detail. Look, experts say that Chanel isn't perhaps as worthy of the price tag as Hermès. And if you're going to make an investment on this scale, when let's face it, you're not going to live in it, you're not going to travel around in it, you want to know that it's going to hold its value. And once upon a time, I was a model and I got to see firsthand behind the scenes the craftsmanship of every little stitch, every fastening, the lengths that they go to source the best possible materials. For me, the point is not all handbags are created equal, some are better than others.
Okay, I'm going to pour cold water on this whole idea, but you can comfort yourself with that story if you wish. Anyway, it's on the Bloomberg Terminal.
Tell it to Prada.
Yeah, to have a read. Luxury goods makers, something we always keep track of course, here on Bloomberg. Right, let's turn our attention then to the market story this morning. So the Federal Reserve Governor Christopher Waller says that there's no rush to lower interest rates, adding that recent economic data warrants delaying or reducing the number of cuts this year. This ahead of the fourth quarter US GDP data today, and on Friday, the PCE, the personal income and spending data out of the US. Joining us now to chew over the market red meat, Bloomberg anchor Kriti Gupta. Good morning, Kriti. Thanks for being with us. First off, where does Waller usually sit then in terms of this spectrum of hawks and doves on the FOMC? How do you rate his comments?
Yeah, so Waller back in November had actually kind of backed himself into a little bit of a corner, and arguably so from his critics, and basically said that when you look at the inflation story and you look at the kind of cuts you need to see 3, 4, 5 good prints of data. So he's kind of sticking with that narrative here in saying that, oh, we just got 2 hot data prints. That's giving him some reason for pause as well. So therefore kind of pushing back his cut idea. He's still saying, look, we're going to need it at some point this year, but maybe not as early as thought, because we still need those several good data points, or at least something that shows that deceleration inflation is going in the right direction.
So 4 times he said there was no rush. It was kind of feeling like the Fed and markets were on the same page. Does this throw that out of alignment?
Yes and no. So I can argue it both ways here, as any good journalist does. The way that it falls into alignment here is that you have seen this kind of volatility in terms of Fed swaps pricing. So I think at the start of the year, for example, we had 6 or 7 cuts priced into the market. That has now decelerated to, I think, 2 in the back half of the year. But that first one is still placed for the summer, still June/July, despite what's happening. So in theory, the markets are listening to the Fed and the Fed speakers and saying, look, this needs to get pushed out further and further. But where they are not aligned is going to be in terms of what that inflationary output kind of actually looks like and what the employment numbers look like. That's where you're starting to see some resistance in the market here, because you aren't seeing that momentum into the bond market that you traditionally would. If the Fed says things are going in the right direction, we're still hot, the consumer is still doing well, the economy is still doing great, well, tell that to the bond market that's still betting on higher inflation and an uptick in inflation, exactly, which is why you're seeing 10-year yields still, I think, at about 4.29 last time I checked.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, of course, we're going to get some important data out on Friday when most major markets, including all the US markets, are closed. This is the personal consumption expenditures price index, and you're expected, it's not expected to be super hot, but it's still not great.
Not great. It's also coming at the same time you hear comments from Chair Powell. So you'll get the data and then you'll get comments immediately after. What's tricky here is, to your point, all the markets are going to be closed globally. And then, of course, on Monday, Europe is going to be closed. The United States will be open. So there's going to be a little bit of a delay in terms of what it actually means, not to mention some of the kind of developments over the weekend. What that means going into it from a market positioning standpoint is simply that it feels like there might be kind of a risk-off idea as well, because traditionally when you've looked at the way the markets have treated each data point, the CPI numbers, the PPI numbers, the last time we got the PCE numbers and the deflator as well, the markets have shrugged it off as simply one data point. So they kind of seem to be on a little bit of a hot streak in terms of their narrative. This one data point may not make that much of a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. So, of course, although it is a holiday on Friday, I just want to point out that Bloomberg Radio will be live with programming around the PCE inflation data and those remarks, as you point out, from Jay Powell. Nathan Hager is going to be anchoring live coverage on both. He'll be joined by Bloomberg's Michael McKeith. So don't forget that the PCE data is out at 8:30 a.m. Eastern time, and then it's 11:30 a.m. Eastern time, those remarks from Jay Powell. So absolutely vital to know that you can't go away. You won't miss a thing if you're listening to us. Thank you so much, Chris, though, for that look through the markets. Bloomberg anchor Kriti Gupta.
Now, a little closer to home, Britain needs to upgrade everything from schools to hospitals, and a long list of spending awaiting the next government. Meg Hillier, chair of the cross-party public accounts committee, said on Thursday whoever wins the general election will confront a long list of big nasties. Joining us now is Bloomberg's little nasty, our UK politics reporter, James Walcock. What's so nasty about a big nasty? James.
Just because I'm 5'6", Lizzie, doesn't engender that kind of abuse. Well, look, we hear this term in politics like kicking the can down the road. A big nasty, Hillier would say, is when we reach the end of the road and there is no room left to run politically. There are 19 commitments, she says, of things that need urgent, essential spending. You're talking things like hospital maintenance, defence spending, affordable housing, legacy IT, all of which now need billions. I mean, look at defence, for example. She says, just to hit our own 2020-2030 targets, we need a minimum of £17 billion extra. If we want to then upgrade the way the defence industry and defence sort of military of the UK sees us in 2030, £65 billion. That's just defence. Take hospitals. Hospital maintenance has doubled from 2015 to today in terms of just the building infrastructure to £10 billion. You then look at waiting lists, which are for 4 years haven't hit their target. For cancer, that's 6 years. The entire hospital budget is £180 billion. You know, that will need to increase. And she says, look, that's just today. Aging population, that's going to get worse. I could go on for quite some time going through all these 19 points. They are things we've all covered on, say, the UK Politics podcast and on Bloomberg Radio before. I think the thing that this committee report makes so stark and nasty is having it all laid out in sort of the clear light of day. It is pretty difficult to sort of reading.
Yes, immensely difficult reading, although not a shock, I think, to anybody who's in the UK and who uses, frankly, hospitals, roads or schools. But how political do you think this is, given that Meg Hillier is a Labour MP? Obviously, she is chair of a cross-party parliamentary committee, but she is nonetheless a Labour MP. Is this a political message?
I mean, it's hard to argue anything. Politics is an apolitical message,
sure.
Caroline. The reason why this inquiry has so much teeth is it comes from the Public Accounts Committee. It is known for its impartiality. It is known for its independent analysis. This is why governments take it seriously. Having said that, I mean, in an election year, it is worth pointing out, saying how badly the state is failing is going to be a political message. But arguably, this causes massive issues for Labour too. I mean, look at the trouble Labour ran into just in trying to promise a £28 billion green upgrade. Like I said, that defence number I pulled out, £65 billion, dwarfs that. Housing, affordable housing, £20 billion is another cost on here. It basically lays out, I think, for the entire state, no matter which government or any political stripe is in charge of it, a unwillingness to take decisions, Hillier says. And that unwillingness, you see it in an unwillingness to take long-term decisions, unwillingness to take difficult decisions. What are we going to cut down on?
Well, Jeremy Hunt, the Chancellor, would say that they are making difficult decisions. They're making efficiency savings in different places so that you don't have to spend as much. So it comes down to, who is this report most dangerous for?
And on that Hunt policy, it's fascinating, though. You look at HMRC, who recently said they were going to wind down their call centre for the first 6 months of the year, only for the government to row back on it and say, actually, no, that would be politically unpopular. Let's keep doing it. Hillier would say, well, the danger is to everyone, frankly, because if you don't address these decisions, the buildings go and collapse. Look at the RAC, the sort of aerated concrete scandal from last year where school buildings start collapsing. The point that Hillier is making is there are serious trade-offs here. You make them these decisions now or in the next government, and you either have to radically increase spending on a few of these issues or cut the departments. That is the kind of very, very, very stark decisions she's setting out. And I think the thing that this report ties together is there is no sector of public life in the UK that is going to be untouched by this, because so many decisions have been kicked down the road.
This is Bloomberg Daybreak Europe, your morning brief on the stories making news from London to Wall Street and beyond.
Look for us on your podcast feed every morning on Apple, Spotify and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
You can also listen live each morning on London DAB Radio, the Bloomberg Business app and Bloomberg.com.
Our flagship New York station is also available on your Amazon Alexa devices. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 11:30. I'm Caroline Hepke.
And I'm Lizzie Burden. Join us again tomorrow morning for all the news you need to start your day right here on Bloomberg Daybreak Europe.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take and Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.